Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. Kids can be like, they're quite inventive when it comes to Mickey taking of surnames. I'm sure you must. Yeah. Those of us at the coal face. Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Hello,
Absolutely.
Alan Partridge
Absolutely.
here. The conversation that's just been faded down, but is still just about audible in the mix, is me on the phone a few weeks ago. I was agreeing with what the other person was saying because, on the other end of the line, was a head teacher whose views on education largely mirror my
I was
own.
wondering, with your permission, I'd like to mock a couple of the
I say
kids'
largely because
surnames
there
and
are
ask them
areas
their
where we
peers.
don't see eye to eye. For example, during our call, the head teacher, Alex Proud, explained to me that he feels there's no place in the
I'll
modern
see
curriculum
you.
for slippering,
Okay.
whereas I think it's a bit more complicated than that.
Thanks, Alex. Yep, absolutely. Bye.
So why was a Proud Partridge conversation taking place? Well, all my conversations tend to involve a Proud Partridge, but on this occasion, it was a man called Proud talking to Alan Partridge. Well, a few months ago, he got in touch to see if I'd come into the school to give a talk to his Year 11 pupils about working in the media. I declined. I'm a broadcaster. Though I can teach, I'm not a teacher. And it's not easy to admit that. Teaching, like nursing, is one of those vocations that society feels duty-bound to describe as the hardest job in the world, when, in fact, anyone can do it, and anyone does do it. But even then, I don't think I'm cut out for teaching. For every kid from a tough estate to whom you become a father figure and make them cry by sitting down next to them in a locker room and telling them you believe in them, or high-fiving them when they manage to do long division, there are 20 or 30 other kids who will smirk, "Morning, sir," as you walk by before stapling a sanitary towel to the back of your blazer. Nah, I figured kids don't want to listen to an old dinosaur like me, and that's fine because this old dinosaur has no interest in teaching them. Besides, at the time I was trying to close a deal to become the new voice of the North Norfolk Milk Marketing Board, so it just didn't make sense to put the interest of some kids over those of my own. I'm Alan Partridge. This is my podcast, The Oast House. Fast forward a week, however, and I'm in a recording studio for the North Norfolk Milk Marketing Board callback. It's down to the final two, and only one of us can scoop the glory. An almost five-figure contract to record both radio and online content for the NNMB. The head honcho is asking me to deliver the slogan, "Nothing refreshes like an ice-cold glass of milk," again and again. Say it faster. "Nothing refreshes like an ice-cold glass of milk." Punchier. "Nothing refreshes like an ice-cold glass of milk." Say it with a smile. "Nothing refreshes like an ice-cold glass of milk." Put a laugh in it. "Nothing refreshes like an ice-cold glass of milk." More of a laugh. "Nothing refreshes like..." "This is ridiculous," I said. At that point, I flipped, rounding on a room full of dairy execs and literally baring my teeth. I said, "This entire enterprise is meaningless. You can't market milk." Silence. A man at the back starts splutting about his 25 years on various milk marketing boards, but I shoot back, "You cannot market milk. If someone needs milk, they buy milk. If they don't, they won't. And nothing anyone does in this room is going to do zippity shit to change the mind of a single shopper, from a frazzled dad to even the most depressed housewife. And deep down, you know it. So let's shovel up this bullshit." I said, "I'm not being difficult. I can say nothing refreshes like an ice-cold glass of milk. Or nothing refreshes like an ice-cold glass of milk. Or nothing refreshes like an ice-cold glass of milk. But I draw the line at nothing refreshes like an ice-cold glass of milk. Because laughing whilst talking about ice-cold milk makes me look insane. It's insane. Can anyone tell me why I would possibly laugh about ice-cold milk? Anyone?" Eventually, the sound engineer said, "I don't know, maybe you find a glass of milk funny." I said, "Yes, but why, Robert? Why? No one laughs over milk. If anything, they cry, and that's because the milk's been spilt. And there's no sense in doing it. People don't laugh at milk. They've slurped it, soured it, shaken it, condensed it, on occasions expressed it. But they ain't never laughed at it, buddy boy. Now, I will laugh at a wagon wheel. I'll giggle at a sugar puff. Hell, I've even sniggered at an after-eight mint for their sheer pomposity. The only justification for laughing at milk is in some sort of scenario involving a buxom milkmaid milking a cow into an old wooden bucket and then walking across a courtyard with a yoke and two pails. 'Nice jugs,' says the guy coming up. 'Are we going to go down that road? Is that what you want, John? Clive? Philip?' In the end, we settled on a playful, 'nothing refreshes like an ice-cold glass of milk.'
which I thought was a reasonable compromise. Sometimes you have to go through a bit of pain to reach a better place. That night I was later told that my comment about eliminating bullshit was particularly hurtful to the milkmakers because bovine feces often finds its way into our milk and the manufacturers have no idea how to stop it and are terrified word will get out. The government is desperate to suppress it because they think if the public panic about dairy, there'll be riots. Milk riots. The milk riots, yeah. Go on internet message boards and it's all there. Some of the guys are quite witty with it, which I find refreshing. Like an ice-cold glass of milk. But the disagreement with the milk execs interested me. I saw we'd made progress. But what that milk-based bust-up showed me was my power to connect with an audience of impressionable minds. Because ad execs are very like children. They think they're clever, but they're not. So on the drive home, I flung on my Bluetooth and simply said, "Telephone. Alex Proud. One. Yes." In brief, to summarise, I agreed to address his students. End call. And, in case you hadn't noticed, I didn't once remove my hands from the steering wheel. Get back in your box, copper. Don't know where that came from. Must be the Dr. Martin shoes I'm wearing. So yes, with an agreement in principle to talk to the students, it was on to the detail. Proud felt that the kids would be most engaged by a short talk followed by a longer, more interactive Q&A. I disagreed. The word interactive always sets alarm bells ringing for me. I prefer the words monoactive or soloactive with the audience primed to receive, not transmit. Yeah, with over four decades of experience in the broadcasting industry, there's a great deal to cover. Allowing the students to steer the conversation was just too risky. No, I and I alone would decide the content. Then it was on to the attendees. Proud was keen that the talk be for the entire year group. As a progressive and enthusiastic educator, his view was that everyone should get to benefit from my wisdom, irrespective of their background or academic record. I disagreed. In life, privileges need to be earned, and it was for that reason I insisted that known trouble causes be sent on a cross-country run. So about 6 miles should do it. Finally, the small matter of payment. While some public figures see any kind of speech giving as a means of topping up their income, I believe that for schools and charities, the rules are different. I agreed to give of my time freely, and Alex and I would draft a press release to that effect, along with a photograph of me standing amongst the happy children with my arms outstretched or folded, but basically hands where you can see them. And that's how, just a few weeks ago, agreement was reached and a date was set. And today is the day. In fact, I need to leave in under an hour, so I'm going to grab a shower right now. Well, I've had my shower. Nothing to report, just a standard hair and body wash. It takes me 4 minutes to ensure I'm a really clean man. To time it, I sing along to a pop song and only get out once I've finished. Normally it's Band-Aid, Feed the World, and I do every part, which is okay because no one can hear me, apart from Rosa, my cleaner, and she's bound by a non-disclosure agreement. Seldom will sometimes stroll in to see what I'm up to, slowly bob along to the song sometimes. He's quite ambivalent, but then again, he is about most things. Apart from food, he's very pro-food. One of the limitations of the podcast format is you can't see I actually did have a full beard. Nothing against Audible, just you can't. And being bearded isn't the usual state of play for my face. The skin on my face isn't really welcoming to a beard. It gets deeply irritated on about the fourth day, and the nerve endings scream, "Scratch me!" And regrettably, I do. A quick scrit while driving. A long, luxurious scratch at bedtime. On bad days, I'll put down my basket in the middle of the supermarket aisle and just rub myself silly with both hands. But by day six, the itching has relented. Why the beard? Well, I was writing the talk about 3 weeks ago. I just decided to grow one. My plan was to shock the kids by shaving it off live in front of them. I thought it might be a powerful metaphor. But once I'd grown it, I couldn't remember what the metaphor was, so I just thought, get rid, which is what I've done. Tackle the thicket with nail scissors, bring it down to a manageable length, and then I go scorched earth with a Bic. Seen Rosa out in the garden. If I stand here, she can't see me. But I can see her. What's she doing? Sometimes she just stands there swaying. Not sure if it's a Filipino thing. It's very funny, this. I asked her if she was doing Tai Chi, and 5 minutes later she came up with a cup of chai tea. Bless her. I didn't say anything, I just drank it. With a heart to tell her. And weirdly now, I occasionally will have chai tea with lots of milk and honey, which is weird. It's funny how sometimes a misunderstanding can lead to a breakthrough. Hang on. What? Hang on. What?
You want me to
learn from... Down what?
Socks. There's a hole.
Don't bother doing that. Just throw them away. They've got a hole in them.
I throw them away.
Because it'll take you an hour to down them.
They're
very... You're £6 an hour and a brand new socks are only worth...
They're very nice.
Which socks are they?
I'm not sure. They're red and brown.
Are they Argyle?
Woolen.
Are they Angora? Or,
I don't know.
Cashmere?
Yeah.
Yes, if they're merino wool, you can darn them.
Stop.
Odd woman, she has her ways, but I wouldn't swap her. She's a bundle of industry in an apron that says, cook, cook, cookability, that's the beauty of... And then the last word has been rubbed off over time. Wonder what it was. Yeah. It sounds like a song from Chaz and the Late Dave, but alas, the end of the sentence must remain a mystery, much like Rosa herself. I said to her, I said, you're a riddle wrapped in a mystery inside an enigma. And she just looked at me blankly for a few seconds, then hoovered off down the hall. Well, before I leave for the school, I thought I'd read out some tweets. I took to Twitter earlier to ask you what you would do to improve British schools. Agatha, a spinster from Perthshire, said she would abolish school dinners and tuck shops, with access to food tightly controlled. Pupils would instead earn food as a reward for correct answers. One correct answer, a potato. Another correct answer, earning a vegetable. Another correct answer, some meat. So, if they're lucky and work hard, by the end of the day, they'll have a square meal. If they don't want to do their best, that's up to them. But they go hungry. Tough love there from Agatha in Perthshire. She sent me a photograph for some reason. She's wearing tweed, and I would describe her as being broad of beam. Wolf, a retired deacon, suggests elimination rounds in which the bottom 10% of each year group are disqualified. Between the ages of 5 and 16, the slowest underachievers are shown the door, whittling down the cohort annually, with only the brainiest going through to the next round. Those that complete their schooling will qualify for the national finals at Wembley to undertake live televised exams. He says, it's a system that would incentivise clever kids while freeing up less academic children to do something more worthwhile, like sweeping up leaves, picking up dog dirt, cleaning graffiti off walls, or running errands for the brighter children. And you can add to that getting them to scrub chewing gum off pavements, given that they probably spat it there in the first place. Let's move on. Tom, with an H, tweets, we should align schools with the UK statutory working hours, changing the school day from 6 to 8 hours and reducing holiday entitlement from 13 weeks down to the statutory entitlement of 28 days. By my calculation, he says, this would enable children to enter the workforce fully educated at the age of 12, providing a welcome boost to the British economy. Oh, he's a captain. Tom adds that he's been to Sri Lanka, where the lack of red tape really frees up business to work with kids.
Alan Partridge from the Oast House, from the Oast House, with Alan Partridge.
Well, almost ready for the off. I've actually got a couple of butterflies. The tummy kind, I mean. I don't have a collection pinned through the heart onto plywood, then kept within a brightly lit cabinet in the cellar. I'm not Nicholas Witchell. No, I mean, I'm getting a bit nervy. Must be the feeling of going back to school after all these years. Am I going to fit in? Am I going to fall foul of the bad lads? Not that I was a goody two-shoes, although I always wore good shoes. They were possible, two of them. Always polished and buckled on the mid-hole. But no, I could have ended up on the wrong side of the tracks. I mean, I was all set to go down a road that could have led to prison, I think. Because when I was 11, I'm ashamed to say, I used to steal apples from a neighbour's garden. Scrumping apples, we used to call it. But call it what you like. It's just plain theft. When you steal apples from someone else's garden, a tree has been burgled. And I've actually been subject to it years later. When the shoe's on the other foot, it's very different. I've had kids stealing apples from my garden subsequently, And they've said things like, well, they were already on the ground, they'd fallen off the tree, to which my response was, if I dropped some soft Italian leather hand-stitched string-back driving gloves on the floor, would you think you could take those too? And they'd just looked at their hands, perhaps imagining them on them. But as I say, I myself could have ended up in a gang. For a brief while, I was actually in a gang. It was a fairly harmless gang, but we did used to have secret meetings in a shed. We might find a bike had been stolen, so we'd draw up a list of possible suspects, people from broken homes, troubled kids, boys that weren't Church of England. A lot of gangs these days sell guns and deal drugs, and who's to say that's not the direction it could have gone in had I not battled hard for the soul of the gang? They wanted to get into stealing empty pop bottles and reselling them for 5p each. I said, no way. This is not the direction that this gang is going to take. I was 12 at the time, but I fought hard and said we should put all our energy into organising youth hostelling trips in Derbyshire. But central to it all was a code of honour. For example, there was a secret password to get into the shed. We all knew, get the password wrong and you get your hair pulled. Andrew, very much my second in command, had found a worm and came rushing in, but in his excitement, he said Cherokee instead of Geronimo. Straight away, he knew he'd effed up. Andrew looked at me with pleading eyes, but I couldn't look weak, not in front of the other boys. What could I do? In the end, Andrew, and I'll be forever grateful for this, closed his eyes, then whispered quietly, just do it. Get it over with, Partridge. So I yanked his hair till he cried. I knew I had to do it, but to this day, it remains one of the hardest things I have ever had to do. And it was at that point I knew I had to get out. Once you're in a gang like that, it's very hard to leave. I was tormented. Do I run away? Set fire to the shed? In the end, I came up with a story. I explained that I wanted to spend more time with my family. They understood perfectly. We shook hands and I walked away. It was surprisingly easy. But I knew I'd be a marked man, forever looking over my shoulder as I cycled down the passage on my bike. Well, I'm back from the school, and I'm feeling pretty buzzy. That went brilliantly well. I arrived at the school, got to the front desk, told the receptionist, headmaster, now. And after some sighing, I was led to his office, where he was having words, shall we say, with a surly-looking 16-year-old called Dexter. Mr. Proud kept saying to the lad, as a school, we have certain values. You know that. Look at me. Look at me. Look at me. In the end, I just said, leave the kid alone. He gets it. Mr. Proud turned to me, and after a bit of harumphing, he asks Dexter to show me to the hall. And it's funny, after all the apprehension about being back at school, that wasn't there anymore. And it wasn't just me walking alongside one of the widest dudes in school. Heads were turning, kids were getting the hell out of our way, and it felt good. Eventually, Dexter utters, cheers for before, and I'm like, whatevs. He offers me a pellet of gum, and I took it. And we were just striding through the corridors, enjoying some gum. Looking cool, breath getting fresher all the time, until we just stood against the wall by the hall, me leaning against it with my knee crooked so that the sole of my shoe was flat against the wall just below my bum. Eventually the bell goes and the two of us are just standing there, gumming it up big time. A couple of minutes go by and Dex says, shouldn't we go in? And I'm like, nah, let him wait. I'm cool with being late. Must have waited there another 30 seconds at least. Then I just spat the gum into a hanky, popped it in my pocket. Let's roll. And I just felt buoyed up. It gave me an extra pizzazz somehow. I took to the stage, didn't even say hello, threw my chair onto a jacket, swiveled on the ball of one foot. Hands up, who hears Dad's got an HDTV? Blank faces. And that may have been because of the slightly odd syntax, but it felt right somehow. What you're not getting? Who hears Dad's got an HDTV? A few kids raise their hands and I'm away, explaining everything from Dolby surround sound to aspect ratios to HD to Ultra HD. And the little buggers are rapt. I went through everything a presenter might need to know, from telling them how to deal with the woman from compliance to demonstrating live TV by asking a boy to read an auto cue while I simulate earpiece talkback from the gallery by calling him on my Bluetooth headset and putting him under pressure by shouting, wrong camera, we've lost VT, or look more concerned, stop waffling, make her cry. At the end, I say, one question, and one question only. They said, what programme would you bring back? I said, unquestionably, Tomorrow's World, but I call it Today's World, because yesterday, today was tomorrow, but tomorrow, today will be yesterday. Riddle me that, you nutters, and I legged it, then went back for my jacket and legged it again, which wasn't an ideal ending, but as I say, went quite well. You're listening to Alan Partridge from the Oast House.
Alan Partridge from the Oast House. Alan Partridge from the Oast House. From the Oast House. With Alan Partridge from the Oast House. with Alan Partridge. Alan Partridge from the Oast House. Alan Partridge from the Oast House. From the Oast House. With Alan Partridge from the Oast House. With Alan Partridge.